There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
He's come to foretold.
The prophecy.
But I had this dream last night that I was looking at a pot just jam full of sausages and like red sauce, right?
Uh-huh.
And the chef came. It was like bubbling.
You know you can dream about anything. Right?
I saw this in my dreams, and then a chef came and he had a pair of tongs and he started taking sausages out of it. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, hey, there's too many sausages. There's too many sausages in the pot. And I was just like, no. You leave those sausages alone.
You dreamt of a sausage thieving chef?
And so the chef just stuffed them all back in there, and I'm just desperately afraid it's about gay sex.
It is possible.
Big messy red bowl just jamming as many sausages in there as a fucking chef can handle.
So in your dream, the fantasy of the dream was that you had as many sausages as you wanted in a pot.
I will say, I then remember I took a sausage out of it with my hands and it was like long and girthy. It was like a lump. It was like sausage. It was a big cooked sausage. Uh-huh. And it was like, was I cupping my own fucking dick and balls in my sleep?
Well, you said long and girthy, not bizarrely shaped and nutty.
Growing, it's different.
Oh, I see.
You know, I've got a Scottish egg at the very top.
Oh, people love to hear about your yak. Yeah, they can't get enough of it. That Henry Lagoon. Welcome to the newest. This is amazing news here, people.
It is.
Cave Comedy Radio's new number one show.
Yeah.
That's us.
It's the John.
Heil us.
Heil us.
Yes.
Heil yourselves.
We're cleansing the other podcasts. We're going to go through and drag them out in the streets and take their shoes and their fucking gold fillings.
It's the genre-defining horror comedy podcast.
That it is.
The best one that's ever existed. I think the only one that's ever existed.
Absolutely. And you should probably do the intro of it now.
That's the last podcast on the left with Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. We're joined by always, as always, by a fella. He loves his meats.
Henry Zebrowski. We'll just do meat. We already did the sausage story. You know what I mean? If it comes down to, there's no point in doing a character because we know that whatever character I do is some mirror fragment of my brain that's gay. That is gay. There's a part of me that's deep down inside.
Right.
Maybe not so deep, but I'm saying like not crazy deep.
Do you feel like the more acting work you get, the more success you get in Hollywood, the gay is kind of bubbling up?
No. I'll waggle it around anybody. Yeah. Any paying customer.
Oh, that's good.
Line them up. That's what I say.
That's right. Today's main question, war. War, what is it good for? Creating haunted battlefields. That's what it's good for. What am I getting the old god for? That's a great intro. War.
So
what
we're doing
is it good
haunted
for?
Battlefields.
Haunted battlefields.
Is that like, straight up, is there not a fucking battlefield? That's not haunted. I imagine they're all haunted.
Maybe
in some
sea
way.
Battles, some sort of submarine conflicts.
But this is a Marcus episode. Marcus knows all. We were talking about this before the podcast. Marcus is very deeply versed in history. He has found some beautiful stories about famous haunted battlefields.
Yep.
Which I've noticed is like as soon as I read like actual history, this is why I did bad in school. Mm-hmm. I glaze over. I literally die on the inside. But I can read about alien garbage for fucking like 6 hours.
Right.
At any given moment. I could just sit right now and read 6 hours of alien material.
You do read very... You read the same as a computer. I can't understand a goddamn thing.
It's binary.
Exactly.
I barely understand it. I think I can't read. I'm starting to think that maybe I can't read. And then they just line up words together in paragraphs on alien info websites that I just kind of make it up as I go.
I think that's very, very possible.
I think so, too.
Anyway, let's get back in our DeLorean and drive back... Back in time. Going back inside.
Gonna go back in time.
We should have had that cue.
Yeah, did you
we
cue it up?
We should have had that music
well,
cue.
Well, we're going back in time.
Yeah.
All right.
To the American Civil War.
Oh.
One of our country's greatest times.
The most wool ever used in a war. That's what
beautiful.
I heard. Because they wore it in their underwear as well.
Yeah, they were sweaty.
In the minds of many soldiers on both sides in the beginning, the war was to be a clean, bloodless affair that would be over in a matter of months with nary a bullet fired.
A Confederate uniform just showed up ghostly over Marcus's body.
Very amazing.
But most soldiers had no idea of the bloodshed to come.
Just let it soak it all in, ladies and gentlemen. How can you fight a war to such beautiful music? You know, the times
they weren't
were
playing
so
this
gorgeous.
Music. Were they play, this is after the fact. Some Mumford wrote this song.
No, Jay Unger wrote this. All right.
Unger wrote it.
Jay Unger is a very well-known American folk artist, and he wrote that theme for Ken Burns' Civil War, one of the greatest documentaries
yeah, 15
ever
years ago.
Made.
All best the songs made during the Civil War were like, tie up the blackie, make him sing. You know, it's like it was all the worst songs on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Burn that church down. Saw a Puerto Rican in it.
Oh, okay.
You know, old
I didn't
Civil
realize
War
we
songs.
Had the Puerto Ricans here during the Civil War. That was a similar voice to your poo-poo pickle
yes,
song.
It's the same man.
Man,
it's
we haven't thought, man. I haven't thought about poo-poo pickle. Pickle in a while. Henry, well, can you throw a poo-poo pickle out there?
Give it to us. Come on.
Come on. We're going to
take a pickle painted brown. Mm-hmm. Take that frown upside down as poo-poo pickle.
It's a poo-poo pickle.
Give it.
Yeah, girl, I'm going to marry you.
Yeah. And what a lucky lady she is.
Oh, that she is.
All right, let's get into some ghosts.
All right, let's get into this. All right, well, the thing is to be known about...
God, I would love to see Henry during the Civil War on a horse.
Oh, no, I would have been hiding under a rock.
Yeah.
I would have been making the other soldiers laugh.
Yeah.
You know, just having a good time. I'd be a chef, maybe.
There was no laughing during
no,
the Civil
no,
War.
We'll find out right now.
We'll find out
right
now.
You don't have a tongue.
Now.
You can't laugh without
but
a tongue.
But before we get into the actual Civil War, we need to go over and talk about exactly what type of hauntings, battlefield hauntings, actually are. And it's pretty obvious to those of you who know your ghost terms that this is definitely residual haunting.
Which is basically this idea that it's like a VCR. Spaces and houses and they collect energy like batteries. And so a lot of times when you read about these battleground hauntings, it's just like watching the movie of the battle. Like
over
a lot of times
you
talk about how
again,
the battle would happen. Like you'd hear ghosts like up to like a month after the battle. Like you'd hear the sounds of battle and smell gunpowder and stuff like that.
I mean, or was a person who was still alive and just nobody was helping him. You know, he's like, I'm actually alive here. And they're like, that ghost is moving.
This ghost has been waking me up 9 mornings a week.
Unbelievable. I'm like, not a ghost. I'm still alive. Ghost trickery.
My horse is dead. He's on me.
Yes. Typical ghost talk.
Well, a lot of times residual hauntings are seen by people who are especially sensitive to it through a process called retrocognition.
Yeah. Okay. Which is it's
smoke
almost,
your doobies.
I would say it's very close to what's its putts? It's like a psychic phenomena. It's kind of like remote viewing. It's kind of like remote viewing. It's kind of like, if you see, we'll edit out the me trying to jog my brain back to
literally working. Slapping himself in the forehead. Well, and it worked.
I can't edit it out if you immediately reference it.
I know. Well, just like, let's just.
Now we got to keep it in. And now we're back to the number 2 podcast on Cape Comedy Radio. So thank you, Henry.
Retrocognition, it's used in a lot of what's called psi fields in psychic criminology and psychic archaeology.
Okay.
Which you say, like, you put a psychic, quote-unquote, in a dark room and you say, hey, make some shit up.
Right, make some shit up. We're going to give you a bunch of money. Maybe you'll get a reality show out of it. So just lie to us. We'll believe you.
I see a man in a tall gray hat, and he is, no, there's a woman there. Oh, good. Thank you.
That
good.
Was
good work.
Yeah,
Harold.
That was great. That was perfect.
There was an experience in 1951 that existed only in sound, because these things, they can be sounds, they can be smells, they can be actual visions. This one was actually, it was only sound in France. Two English women, they heard sounds of a famous air raid that happened around there in World War II. And people who questioned them about this afterwards, these women had no, or they say they had no prior knowledge of the battle, but people who interviewed them afterwards, they were like, yes, that's the sound of that airplane. That's the sound of that bomb. It was remarkable.
How did they do that? They go like, and then the plane sounded like,
well, that's a WW2
plane.
Oh,
no, and the other plane kind of sounded like, oh, that's a Humfutter. That's a Humfutter 947.
A Humfutter 947.
That's the biggest plane that England ever made. You know, they built it, made it look like a Pelican. It's a great air raid they did.
The old English pelican. So that's a form.
Yeah, that's a form of. And what a lot of people see in these battlefield hauntings, they see phantom armies. And phantom armies, I mean, they date back to the Assyrians. You know, you'd see ghostly warriors that would make attacks on desert cities.
There's another thing they call this phenomenon. They also call it time slips.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, because then the Philip K. Dick experience that he had, where he said that he traveled back in time to the Roman era and then watched it superimpose on modern times, basically, some entity telling telling him that, you know, there is no such thing as time, and what happened in the past is also happening right
time
now.
Time Slip is also going to be a brand new movie starring Keanu Reeves and Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Check it out in Time Slip.
It's just like men slipping on clocks.
Like guys just tripping over fucking grandpa.
That's great stuff.
Well, the most interesting thing that I found throughout all of my research on haunted battlefields, you know, and I went over to Europe, I went all over the world to research this type
but
of stuff.
But through the powers of right. books and your imagination,
and
right?
Internet,
you didn't actually
yeah.
travel.
No, Marcus no, is not allowed to board a plane. He's actually red flagged by the TSA.
I am on the no-fly list.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I found that was most interesting is that the strongest hauntings were from civil wars.
So right now, like Syria, that's just going to be one hell of a nice haunted battle.
That will be really interesting. Because then again, this is also, because we keep digging to look for ghost material and serial killer material in the Middle East, and I never see that shit.
Yeah.
So time will tell with that. But it's the Civil War, the emotions ran so high. Like,
so are you encouraging people in the Middle East to keep the Civil Wars going?
Keep
so
it we can up. Have.
Need so we have our little radio ghosts. Program, and then we can have a nice haunted
We could get at
matter.
Least two episodes out of a haunted Middle East, so just keep murdering each other.
Yes, that's great.
But no, the Civil War was I mean, depending on what people were fighting for. People were fighting for their what they believed to be their home. They were fighting for their economic stability in
Lunch,
terms of viewing you know? Slaves as horses. Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? Like
slightly less yeah. than horses.
Perhaps. I mean, it's brother against brother. You're fighting guys that look like you, that speak the same language as you.
Also,
people that you might know.
Yeah. And the way people died was so excruciating in the Civil War. A lot of times people say, like, when you got shot in Civil War, you didn't die from the gunshot. They were made out of soft lead. The bullets were like, they were round, soft lead bullets, and they would just burrow their way under your skin. They'd hit you and stick. And then the infection would kill you, so you have this prolonged suffering.
Yeah.
And then especially, like, when you talk about phantom armies with, like, the Assyrians and, like, ancient armies, they were just beating each other with fucking sticks.
Yeah.
You know, and horses were stomping each
other.
I
mean, I would actually say that the sword is probably a better way to die than an old-timey bullet.
Yes.
At least the sword
maybe
will pierce
you bleed
you
out. Yeah.
Yeah, you just bleed out kind of immediately.
Well, let me tell you guys about the bullet they actually used. It was called the mini bullet.
Mm.
The mini bullet?
The mini bullet,
oh, sorry,
yeah.
I thought of the mini donut for some reason.
I don't know why.
And the caliber, it was the first ever bullet that was actually given a caliber. It was a 58.
This is why you failed history class, by the way.
What?
Because you just thought of a mini donut.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's my whole life. Yeah.
It was a 58 caliber weapon, or a 58 caliber bullet. It was a half inch in diameter.
Yeah, it was like the size of Andre the Giant's thumb.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
If you think about it in modern terms, the largest bullet that we use in combat is a 50 caliber. We use them in sniper rifles now.
And those are massive bullets.
Yeah. Huge, yeah. huge bullets. And like Henry said, these things were made of soft lead. So when they hit bone, when they hit intestines, they expanded throughout. If you got
it's
hit,
sort of like when you threw gack at the wall.
Yeah.
Do you remember
yeah.
that?
Yeah,
nice
yeah,
little
or phloem.
Yeah, phloem was fun, but it didn't quite spread the way.
Yeah, they crushed and smashed bones so badly, there was no hope of any kind of recovery. That's where the amputation came in,
right.
which we'll get into later.
Well, let's get into some ghosty stories.
Yeah, let's get some ghosty things in there, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, before, let's go.
I might get amputated during the Civil War, though, just to have some of that sweet whiskey.
I mean, I think you could just have whiskey if you went to the dentist or you went to the barber or you went to the movie theater. Or
no,
you
got cocaine if you went to the dentist.
Well, you get yeah, that's even better.
All right.
You get whiskey or cocaine anywhere you went. You don't need to have your arm chopped off.
I just wish the doctors would still just feed you full of booze whenever you had a surgery done.
They will if you go to the right doctors.
That's fine.
All through Boston.
I'll look in all the alleys of New York, and I'll find him.
Well, let's go through some of the numbers to really give people the scope of this war and how many people actually died. 350,000 Union soldiers died from various causes. Here's the interesting thing. The majority of people who died in this war died from disease.
Yes, because they were stuck. They were sitting in muck and in the cold. And like they were, you know, trench foot. And they got the flu. And because they're just hanging out for months. A lot of times they were talking about, like, they'd wait for supplies to show up. And they'd be stuck in, like, a valley with their food supply and all that shit cut off from them,
you know,
just
moldy.
Waiting for people to show up, and they're just sitting in their shit. They're sitting on buckets of shit.
There was this whole idea that, you know, your husband goes out to war, and then he comes back, and he's a stronger man. He's grittier, and he's more handsome. Some well-placed scars, like that new goddamn I, Frankenstein Eckhart character. That's not what Frankenstein monsters look like.
I'm kind of excited for I, Frankenstein.
It looks terrible. That's not what Frankenstein monsters look like. But really, he comes back with trench foot.
Yeah.
Which that's not good.
Yeah. No, that's and like more racist whole body.
Than yeah, exactly. Holden McNeely from the Round Table of Gentlemen. Trench foot.
I mean, if you want to talk about psychic scars, 25,000 men died from suicide, execution, sunstroke, or just plain fucking accidents.
Yeah, well, wool allergies.
Yeah, well, that's a bad one.
That's a bad one for Civil War because everything was wool.
Mm-hmm. And that's just on the Union side. On the Confederate side, we don't have as many records because a lot of them were destroyed.
Yeah, they can't write and read. They played with rocks.
That was the major problem.
I feel like, sorry, Marcus. I'm sorry, people from the South. I love the South.
Yes. Out of all those, between suicide or just getting murdered there or with the disease, I feel like sunstroke is the nicest one. You just picture a little sunscreen on their nose.
That's like how Louis Anderson's going to die.
Well, yes, you know what I mean? Because like, he's having a great time on the beach.
In the Confederate side, it's estimated that 150,000 died of disease and 95,000 were killed or mortally wounded in combat.
This is insane numbers. We're talking like almost a million Americans died right here.
More Americans died in the Civil War than all other American wars combined.
Because we know how to fight.
That's right. It was a real even matchup.
And not only on the Confederate side, not only did you have the soldiers dying, you also had the first instance of total war, Sherman's March.
Yeah, burn the buildings, rape the women, take all the shit, like just level the place.
50,000 civilians died.
It's like the three alls from the Japanese war crimes, burn all, loot all, rape all.
Yeah.
Burn all, loot all, rape all. That's going to be on your funeral.
I hope not. I hope not, but we'll see how things turn about in my
it'll
life.
Be a nice little pamphlet.
Yeah.
So the bloodiest battle of the entire Civil War and the bloodiest battle in American history was the Battle of Antietam.
Antietam. No, and it was also really interesting because they call it, if you're from the South, they call it a different thing. It's called Battle of Antietam, and it's also called, like, Battle of, like, Smacky Brook, which is just, like, it's, like, not the same. It's like Antietam is a better name for a fight.
In 4 hours, 23,000 men were either killed or wounded in this battle.
That's
Can you imagine
long...
the sounds of that? Can you imagine the sounds?
Whoa!
Yeah.
I'm
one guy just going like, it's like, what are you so happy for? And he's like, I'm going to Italy.
I mean, this is, So people would just run at each other with their bayonets and just start shooting.
And stabbing each other, beating each other with rocks.
No, it wasn't a bayonet war at all.
This was all bullets.
Because the rifles that they used, you can kill someone from 1,000 feet. Because the reason why there were so many casualties is because the generals thought they were still fighting a bayonet war. They were still fighting a musket war. Because these rifles and the machine guns and the Gatling guns, all this shit was brand new.
That's all the North. The North had all those guns.
We had all the killing machines.
Yeah, we had a lot of shit. But the soldiers, the generals, they didn't know how to fight these wars. And in fact, during battles, there was so much smoke and confusion that men couldn't hear the generals. Certain units would just get lost and scattered, and they would have no idea where they were. And you got to remember, these were fucking children that were fighting.
They're like literally 15 years old.
Yeah, they're 15 to 18. Like a lot of these guys, they're 18, 19. None of them have battle experience. Mm-hmm. None of them were even in a gunfight. They didn't know anything past hunting with their guns.
But it's almost, I mean, that's why I don't even agree about raising the age of bringing kids into the army or to serve their armed forces, because I really think that these are people, they'll be able to heal from it. If you're 15,
I don't know.
But like
you might
psychologically,
just be messed up forever.
I don't know.
We didn't get to see Civil
War
vets.
You look at it like
vets,
it's a video game.
If they're anything like Vietnam vets, I don't think they came out of there.
Yeah, no fun.
That's what they say about Vietnam vets. Or a little bit too much fun.
So the most haunted place in the entire battlefield of Antietam, Bloody Lane.
Bloody Lane.
Now, I don't know why.
Was it called this before or after the war?
After. Absolutely.
Okay.
All it was before the road or before the war was a narrow sunken road that Robert E. Lee thought, all right, this is a great place to defend. We can really get through. We can punch through the defenses here and we can possibly win this battle. Soldiers on both sides were firing at each other continuously. Finally, the Confederates were overrun, and in this one lane alone, this narrow lane, if you look at a picture of it, it's maybe fucking, I don't know, 10, 50, like I would say 20, 30 yards wide.
Okay. Damn.
5,000 men died here in this one
fucking ghost nursery.
And according to eyewitnesses, Bloody Lane is haunted.
What?
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah, because they're like, it's like, you know what? We were just trying to have a nice Sunday stroll, and I can't believe how many ghosts we were raped by in there. I'd say, if I could ballpark it, I'd say about 5,000.
Wow, a little spectrophilia there.
Well, it's one of those places you can smell gunfire, you can smell, you can hear gunfire, you can smell gunpowder all around the area. One visitor saw a ton of Confederate soldiers walking towards them, thought they were reenactors until they just vanished.
You see, this is where part of me, it's like, I like the idea of residual haunting, but I also believe there's something to do with time. I think that there is a time aspect being played where it's both recorded and maybe it's the, you know, what we talk about with the vortices, like things are like, this is a place where things could be thin because there's so much terror that happens in this place and there's so much psychic energy that's created when these events happen that like they become like bookmarks.
Do you think there's a tear in
maybe
time
something
here?
Like that,
yeah,
you know, something like that, or it's just the idea, you know, it just shows,
I mean,
that
that's
time's
a lot
really fluid
for this very tiny space of earth. That's a lot of debt, and like I figure like each like yard is like I might have a foot at some point die on me or something like that, but they just got 5,000. They're like, what did we do
in there,
you know?
I
mean,
in
bloody peaceful land.
Can you imagine in this one? I mean, it was a sunken road, so it was, you know, it was essentially like a half circle. 5,000 men, a river of blood.
Yo, yeah. That's called Bloody Lane.
Yeah, it's called Bloody Lane.
Take old Mary Jane down there, give her a finger pop, and then you call Bloody Lane again for a different reason.
That's disgusting.
So the most convincing report of a haunting on Bloody Lane came from a bunch of Baltimore schoolboys.
Okay. I love nothing more than a Baltimore schoolboy.
Well, be careful here. Let's not indict your self.
Pat him on the head, give him a lollipop, keep a secret for a year.
Yeah.
So these kids, for a whole year.
Yeah.
Which you have ample time to relocate somewhere.
Go to Italy.
I'm going to Italy.
So these kids, they heard singing, and they went back to their teacher, and they said, this is weird, we heard someone singing Deck the Halls out there.
Really?
La 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 la.
Like, you know that song is forbidden in this school.
It's a religious song. No, it's not.
And so the teacher, he was, you know, a Civil War buff, and he immediately knew what that singing was. It was the war cry of the Irish 69th New York Militia.
Okay,
and
so the 60... That was their war cry?
No, their...
I mean, it was just a different song back then. All songs used to be about murder and slaves, and then they gradually got turned into Christmas songs.
It doesn't matter if it was... Yeah, that's true.
No, it was Gaelic that they were singing. They were singing... what they were singing was fa-a-bala. Like,
well, that sounds terrifying. Yeah, Gaelic, that sounds better.
Fa-a-bala!
Okay, you can kill to that.
Which in English means... Clear the way!
So
good.
So that sounds like making everybody run, though. Why does Gaelic sound like Klingon?
I don't know. It's very similar. Very similar.
Another haunted place in Antietam is Burnside's Bridge.
So what happened with these kids? So they heard this.
They heard the cry.
Yeah, then it was over.
And that's it.
They saw ghosts. They just saw ghosts.
Yeah. They heard ghosts. They didn't actually see them, but they heard them. Another haunted area of Antietam is Burnside's Bridge, also known as Roarback Bridge.
I like that. Roarback Bridge. It's exciting. Yeah. I think, is there somebody underneath this bridge right now eating a bunch of pot?
Sir, I've been asleep for a couple weeks now. You kids run along. Ain't no ghosts here. When ghosts just like drag the homeless man down.
Scarlet, continue.
Yeah.
So this is the bridge where Ambrose Burnside, General Ambrose Burnside of the Union Army, pushed back Confederates, lost a lot of men. I don't have the exact figures of how many people were lost at Burnside, but a lot of these Union soldiers, they just fucking buried them as quick as possible.
You didn't have to get the body back to their home at all.
I mean, nobody gave a shit.
Nobody cared.
Give a shit now.
Well, no. The practice of embalming actually came from the Civil War.
Okay,
that was the first time that Americans really got into the embalming of bodies because they did want to get these people were so far away from home that they wanted to get these people back to their families. But we all know how fast bodies putrefy and decompose. It's a fast fucking process.
Right.
So they figured out this embalming method.
Never mind the fact that the mail system was a little creakier back in the day because everything was run by a horse.
And
if the horse didn't get the fucking oats he needed, you're not going to get the mail on time. And you got fucking little Jimmy Peterson in the back of your horse carriage, and he's supposed to be delivered as a fresh corpse to his grandmother in fucking 2 weeks.
Not happening.
It's not going to happen.
Nope. No. So if you would go dig around on Bloody Lane, would we find a bunch of bones?
This is on Burnside's Bridge, and absolutely. They're all unmarked graves.
Yeah.
So there That's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
And there's a lot of Civil War battlegrounds, especially there's a naval battleground that during huge, so many men died during this Navy battle. During huge storms, still to this day, bones will wash up on shore.
Cool. Bones.
If you talk about those, if only fish could talk, they could tell you how scared they are by the ghosts down there.
Oh my goodness, yes.
It's like a haunted little mermaid down there.
So if you go down there and collect a bunch of bones and then bring those bones out and like bring them to the creek in the cave, let's say, would they haunt the area?
I hope so.
Is the ghost in the bones?
I mean, a ghost will, I mean, as...
I would say it depends on the curse involved.
Yeah.
The psychic phenomena that's involved. Where it's like, because a lot of times they think it's about the location.
Yeah.
But there's always...
like real estate.
We could probably do a whole episode about haunted bones.
Yeah.
Because there's skulls that they talk about. There's skulls in the Tower of London that they say are haunted. You got Ed Larson's penis.
Ed Larson's penis, yes. The most haunted bone around.
The hauntings at Burnside's Bridge, they're your standard orb hauntings. People see blue lights floating all around this bridge.
And then there are a lot of people, you know, we've already talked about that. They say that orbs are different than full-form ghosts. That orbs are just like a... it's just energy globules floating in the air, like oil on top of water. Mm. And then when you see the full-motion ghosts... that's like for real ghost. Yeah.
So what does it mean when you see the full figure of a ghost? I mean, does that mean that person died a more horrific death?
Maybe. Or it just was recorded.
Are you talking about full torso apparitions here?
I'm talking full torso apparitions.
You can also hear at night, you can hear the sound of a drum playing a cadence and it slowly fades into the night.
Sounds like a sound designer's fucking wet dream down there.
And so now we're going to get to another haunting, but this is arguably the most horrifying part of the Civil War, the hospitals.
Ooh, yeah. Because at this point, it just seems like the ghosts are trying to entertain visitors.
Yeah.
Just drumming and singing for them.
All it does is increase the tourism of the areas.
Why are they so scared of us? All we're doing is singing our favorite Gaelic song. Well, times have changed, I guess. Our music is no longer popular.
It's Katy Perry with the boobies and the bubbles.
Can anyone sing that Born This Way song?
So, of course, you know, from the battle, the Confederate soldiers had to be taken somewhere else.
Yes.
And the first place they were taken was St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Screams of the injured and dying still come from the building. You see flickering lights from the church's tower.
That's got to be rough running that artist commune out of that.
The wounded were also taken to people's homes around the area. And there's one house in particular where they say, legend has it, that the bloodstains on the floor cannot be scrubbed away. They cannot be sanded away.
They are
permanently indented into the house itself.
Rock and roll. Right. I look at that as more being like, well, that's like pre-furnished for me. I don't have to do any painting.
That's right. What do you call that? When you polish a floor or put a little
stain. It is a stain. It's a blood stain.
A blood stain.
That's what you're trying to say.
Right. It's like a blood stain.
Yeah. Like a blood stain.
When these Confederate soldiers got taken to this Episcopal church/hospital, what were some of the medical procedures that they were doing on them that would cause such a horrific?
They always had to use the knee rippers and the eye snappers.
I don't want the eye snappers. My eyes are fine. They're fine. No.
I got to take a good hard look at them eyes.
Oh, we're going to get into that right now. The closest thing that people could describe these battlefield hospitals as, hell on earth.
Hell yeah. Oh,
absolutely. These surgeons, they were...
And this is the place where you're theoretically supposed to go and get better, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's hell on earth.
Theoretically.
Good.
Here's a fact about the surgeons working in the Civil War. Out of 11,000 Northern physicians, 500 have performed surgery before.
Ooh.
In the Confederacy...
It's just not a thing you should, dabble in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I just picked up a guitar and sort of tore him with Van Halen.
Right, you know? Right. So what professions were they recruiting from? Was it butchers?
I mean, they were physicians. They were people with a medical background,
oh, okay.
But they weren't surgeons. Out of the Confederate Army, they had 3,000 medical or battlefield surgeons. Only 27 had any prior experience
with
surgery.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, this is on-the-job training.
Yeah, of course, I would just hate to be the first, like, one of the first 50, because they're really trying out some new stuff on you there.
Yeah, anyone who was wounded in the head, belly, or chest, they just put him to the side and waited for him to die. It's just like, nope. And you would hear these men, they would scream in agony, scream for their mothers.
I'm not dead, I'm not dead.
You'll be soon. Don't you worry about it, Bernadette.
I mean, at some point, Bernadette becomes so annoying that you just must look at this pile of future corpses and hate them.
Oh, yeah.
If you're
a
doctor, you're just like, shut up.
All they're doing is ruining your day.
Yeah.
Here is, I'm going to read you guys an account from the medical director of the Army of the Potomac, Dr. Jonathan Letterman. Here's what he wrote after the Battle of Antietam.
It's a beautiful song.
I know,
wrote.
I like it.
The surgery of these battlefields has been pronounced butchery. Gross misrepresentations of the conduct of medical officers have been made and scattered broadcast over the country.
I saw toes that looked like pepperonis. I saw knees that looked like pepperonis.
Would you stop thinking about me for a second? He's doing a reading.
It caused deep and heart-rending anxiety to those who had friends or relatives in the Army who might at any moment require the services of a surgeon. It is not to be supposed that there were no incompetent surgeons in the Army. It is certainly true that there were. But these sweeping denunciations against a class of men who will favorably compare with the military surgeons of any country because of the incompetency and shortcomings of a few are wrong in doing justice to a body of men who have labored faithfully and well. It is easy to magnify an existing evil until it is beyond the bounds of truth. It is equally easy to pass by the good that has been done on the other side. Some medical officers lost their lives in their devotion to duty in the Battle of Antietam, and others sickened from excessive labor, which they conscientiously and skillfully performed. If any objection could be urged against the surgery of those fields, it would be the efforts on the part of surgeons to practice conservative surgery to too great an extent.
See, it's only like this tone of voice, this accent, and this music that like made slavery like seem kind of okay.
Yeah,
for like 200 years.
Class adventure. Yeah, like, all these surgeons did were butcher people.
Oh yeah,
the skillful art.
They're just being like, well, you got a paper cup, we're gonna have to lose that whole hand. You know, just like smash.
See, what we gotta do is we gotta smash the bone so it's easier for me to snip through with this pair of horse scissors.
They weren't carving Elvis out of a peanut or anything. I mean, these were not skillful surgeons.
The
way he sounds, the way that he says that, though, it really does seem like they were doing a great job.
They were doing God's work.
The actual process of amputation, they would take a bone saw, which is where the term sawbones comes from.
Okay.
Sawbones?
Sawbones. Yeah, you never... Well, okay, I guess that's a Southern thing.
What is a sawbone?
A doctor. It's just what you call a doctor.
Oh, you call him a sawbone. I always call him a doctor. Yeah. Physician, maybe. I called him a name that didn't terrify me, you know?
I gotta go off and see the teeth cracker.
Wednesday. Yes.
So he'd saw the bone. He'd saw the leg until the bone was completely severed.
Right.
And they just throw it into a pile of limbs.
Absolutely.
And
dogs are playing with it. People are just being like, the knee bone connects to the ankle bone, like laughing it up.
If you want to look on the bright side, it was a great time to be a dog. Full of bones.
And
bunch of meat.
And each of these battlefield hospitals, they would have piles of limbs. I mean, I'm talking the like 10-foot high piles of arms and
now,
legs.
Now, Timmy, I'm at work now. Just go jump into bones. Go jump into bloody bones.
I like how the bones go click and click.
I think he's going to grow up to be a nobleman.
And so after the limb was amputated, the surgeon would tie off the arteries with either horsehair, silk, or cotton threads.
That's very nice.
Would then scrape the end and the edges of the bone smooth so it wouldn't work back through the skin.
Great.
And then the flap of skin left by the surgeon would be pulled across and sewed closed, leaving a drainage hole. Because a lot of these guys got gangrene infections.
Sure. Yeah,
because actual disinfection of surgical equipment only was discovered in 1865.
A bit late.
The last year of the American.
But don't worry, they waved a bunch of sage over it and made three wishes, and that's all you have to do to make things clean.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've heard that. If you want to recreate that, just get a burrito and put a lot of guacamole in it and just squeeze it from one end.
That's what it just sounded like. It sounded like the way I wrap Christmas presents.
It really does, yeah.
Well, one surgeon...
And of course, where your Christmas... You have to have a breathe hole because you're always giving live animals.
One surgeon recalled...
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. entirely reasonably, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
We operate...
Yes.
We operated on old blood-stained and often pus-stained coats. We used undisinfected instruments.
Why do you sound proud? Why are you proud?
They can't get enough of that pus stain. Yeah.
From undisinfected plush-lined cases. If a sponge, if they had sponges, or an instrument fell on the floor.
This is just like the worst OK Cupid About Me section possible.
It was washed and squeezed in a basin of water and used as if it was clean.
As if. You just pretend it's clean.
Guess and.
This is what I used to do with my bedroom as a child.
This is where improv came from.
Yeah.
Guess how long each limb, on average, each surgeon would spend on amputating a limb.
I'm going to say 12 minutes a leg.
10 minutes.
Whoa! 10 minutes. I guess that's fast.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, when
if there's any
amputated,
butchers out there, tell us how long it takes. If we got a butcher who listens to the police, please tell us how much does it take. How long does it take to dissect a pig?
I mean, the pig's got a smaller leg, though, doesn't it? You just chop
it's got
it right
off. Bones.
You think so?
I have no fucking clue.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
So now let
that's
us
the most
get...
accurate thing you've ever said on the show. That's great.
Now let's move on to what is arguably the most haunted place in all of America.
Yes.
Gettysburg.
Ooh.
It was fought over 3 days in 1863. There were 50,000 casualties.
Was it like to the day of Woodstock? like 100 years ago to the day?
It was July 1st to the 3rd.
Hmm.
Yeah. So right before,
close.
Right before
nice
4th
weather,
of July.
Though. Yeah.
Nice God.
Pennsylvania in the middle
it's
of summer.
It's a little hot, but it's better than the freezing cold polar vortex that we're suffering through right now.
Tell me about it. Is it cold enough for you?
Let's discuss the weather.
Well, there's a particularly large number of shadow people reported at the Devil's Den.
Describe shadow people.
Go ahead, Hannah.
Shadow pepper.
Are you you're thinking about peppers?
Shadow pepper. Shadow people are entities that apparently, like, a lot of times it's associated with sleep paralysis and also seeing things out of the corner of your eye, where it's like you see an image, it's just like a shadow, a shape of a human, and George Norrie is a great champion of shadow people, and
absolutely.
He loves to hear stories about them.
From coast to coast, of course. So were the shadow people seen by the soldiers at the time, or are these seen by people now?
The shadow people, it started weeks after the battle, days after the battle, and it continues to this
and
day.
And so if you would fight for 3 days, I mean, this is just 3 days straight, right? So these folks were
Lot of these battles, there was no breaks whatsoever. Men would lose track of time. They'd had no idea how long they were fighting for.
It's nuts to me. I have a very accurate idea of how long I'm doing anything because I'm so excited to get back to doing nothing.
That's right.
You know?
And the reason why the Devil's Den was so particularly brutal...
Because the channel was stuck on C-SPAN on the old TV
motor.
Oh,
that's the worst.
It was a perch for Confederate snipers. So these snipers are just up there, and they're just boom, boom.
They were crushing
boom,
them.
Boom, boom.
And that's a pretty good position to have in any sort of army, the sniper position. You're kind of safe up there.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to be a sniper.
Yeah.
Well,
is this where the term shooting fish in a barrel comes in?
No, that's from the old fish barrels from back in Jerusalem, Jesus' time.
Oh, I see. They had guns back then.
Again? Just made that up.
Made it up. Okay.
No clue.
Interesting.
Well, the Gettysburg is interesting because it not only has the hauntings on the battlefield, but it has so many different hauntings of the houses surrounding Gettysburg.
But I also think
it's
the
really whole town.
What's important for these hauntings to actually, like, what they make these sites like historic sites, so there's nothing built on them. There's nothing like interrupting that energy that's still sitting there. It's kind of like a haunted house. It's like the Bloody Lane, where it's a concentrated area and nobody touches it.
I mean,
and there's also
you...
something to the importance of it and the giving to it the psychic energy of like this is an important place about and like there is a very like specific mark in history is here very bloody and that psychic support also I think probably supports the ghost energies.
Well, they need to build a Walmart on Bloody Lane. That would be amazing.
Oh my God! Yeah,
and you like see an IHOP,
those Hulk gloves flying everywhere, just going Hulk smash, Hulk smash.
Yeah.
Well, the very first casualty of Gettysburg happened at the Cashtown Inn. It's your standard place where you know they have It's poltergeist activity. You have knocks on the doors, lights turning on and off, doors locking and unlocking. And the owners of the house, they claim to have photographic evidence of this soldier who was killed there.
I mean, if these lights go on and off, and if the doors open and lock and unlock at the perfect time, it might just be unbelievably convenient. You know, it's the first clapper. You know, you clap three times,
Sergeant,
the ghost will turn the light.
Private Sergeant Clapper. From
He always turns the lights on at the perfect time.
I think the creepiest battlefield haunting of Gettysburg that I found was who they called the red-haired woman. Ooh. It's a woman, they say, like, she's wearing a gray homespun dress. She's got the most beautiful red hair you've ever seen.
How's
and
the face?
Face, beautiful.
Beautiful face. She's got a nice face.
She's beautiful.
Rump
woman.
On it.
She's a nice rump. It's a good rump.
You can pump the, if you want to pump the rump, you can pump the rump.
I want to reach around and grab the front. Pump now the rump. Feel the top. Oh, all over that red-headed
woman. Did anybody
woman.
Notice when Henry walked in, all the female ghosts left? Isn't that weird? I don't even think it's haunted anymore.
Line up, lady ghosts.
They love you, Henry.
So this woman, you see her wandering around the battlefield in a daze, just not really, not running, not walking, just stumbling along, and she just screams, Jim.
Jim.
Over Jim. And over again.
Jim!
He's not an old Jim. Jewish man. Oh, Jim, where are you?
Oh, Jim, I can't believe these prices.
I mean, there's a lot of guys named Jim probably out there on the battlefield.
Absolutely.
A lot of ghost Jims.
It could have just been any girl with a fucking red wig on walking around there looking for Jim and getting out of some frat Halloween party.
You never know. There's probably a lady doing it right now in Tallahassee.
God, I wish I was Jim, though.
Yeah, that would be nice. Know?
We all want to be Jim.
Feel bad for all the Bobs and the Johns out there.
Another haunted house is Hommelbaugh House. It's where a famous brigadier general, his name was William Barksdale. He was a Confederate general. He was brought to this house to
Even
die.
Even the names are racist. Even the names sound like racist. It's like, well, President Brigadier General William Barksdale, I come on down here. I'll own all you. And it's just like, no, this is present day. Those are the New York Knicks.
Leave him alone.
You can hear his anguished cries, as he's dying slowly. You can also hear, this is an interesting one, this is an actual animal haunting. Because he had a dog with him constantly. After Barksdale died, the dog sat by
his
grave.
It's so funny because his name's Barksdale.
Right. I didn't even think of that.
Marcus, did you think of that?
I didn't think of that.
I thought about it, but Henry said it first.
Good.
Isn't that something?
As long as one of us got it.
Yeah.
Barksdale.
Number three podcast on Cave Comedy Radio.
So the dog sat by the grave and starved to death until, after his master died, just completely starved to death.
Loyal dog, huh?
Yeah, and you can still hear...
No food around. One of the two.
And you can still hear and see the dog wandering the grounds to this day.
Yeah.
Does he hang out with the general, with the brigadier general?
I don't know if you see him. Well, I don't think you see the brigadier general.
Brigadier general's ghost just like riding the dog through the town.
I weigh nothing now. I can finally ride the dog.
Now for the creepiest haunting in all of Gettysburg that I cannot believe I have never heard of before this, the Soldier's Orphanage.
The Soldier's Orphanage. Okay.
I love it.
So these are children of soldiers.
It is. No, I'll get to why it's called the Soldier's Orphanage.
Oh, very good.
But yes.
I thought he said he was going to get to it. He answered immediately.
We'll get to it.
He did get to it, though.
Yeah, I did get to it.
Quickly,
absolutely.
Though.
This place is so haunted.
What are you yelling at me for?
No.
It's so haunted that some psychics refuse to go inside.
Jesus.
People who are particularly sensitive, they refuse to go inside.
You quit being pussies. At night, a fireman went into the burning World Trade Center.
Be a hero, psychic. They didn't want to go in there.
And it's not often when I'm researching stuff online and I see something and it immediately gives me chills.
Let's do this.
I saw pictures of what that came to be referred to as the pit. Ooh. And it just immediately...
Can we look at the pictures?
I'll show them to you. I don't have them pulled up right now.
Oh, okay.
But the sad story of the Soldier's Orphanage began when they found a soldier dead on the grounds of Gettysburg clutching a picture of three children.
Okay.
And for some reason, the press grabbed onto this, and the Philadelphia Inquirer ran this big campaign, whose father is he?
So funny how like newspapers have also like barely changed, where it's like if you could get that emotional hook in to like, of course, because you're talking about war and it's like a big juicy story, of course.
Yeah, and people loved it. They ate it up.
Is it possible that he was a pedophile?
No.
Do we know that?
You're disgusting.
Is it possible?
These are American heroes.
Well, he's a Confederate.
Oh, fuck him.
No,
he's a
not.
Pedophile.
Oh, he's
a... Yeah, they're not going to run a fucking Confederate soldier in the Philadelphia Inquirer.
All right, unless he's a pedophile.
He's a hero.
So well, soon...
You never know.
Soon his wife... Falinda Humiston.
Falinda?
Falinda, you gotta quit sucking that horse's dick.
So, can I go to war? Because Falinda's being a real Falinda again.
Oh, she and refuses to put any milk in the fucking jug. She keeps just sucking it out of the udder, and I keep telling her it ain't semen.
Falinda, get off the udder.
Semen is good protein for the lady.
My father told me not to marry you, Falinda.
You're horrible people, both of you.
I mean, what?
Because she was a good woman. You know
you
what she
know
did?
Her.
You know what she
what did?
What
did she do?
After the outpouring
changed
of-
her name to Wendy?
No.
That's a fine, better name than Falinda.
Melinda. Melinda would have been a better name.
Melinda's a much better name.
Oh, Melinda,
but
yeah.
After the outpouring of public support, people gave her so much money. You know what she did? She moved to Gettysburg, and she opened an orphanage for soldiers, children.
Aww. That's very nice.
Yeah, she opened, and after a few years, because of other obligations, they don't go into what they actually were, but because of other obligations, she turned the orphanage over to a young woman named Rose Carmichael.
That's a nice name.
That is a nice... Rose, yeah.
Rose was a merciless sadist who beat the children
this
and
is
tortured
what I was,
them,
that's
tying them up in the basement for days and even killing some of them. The crimes were discovered after a runaway was caught and told of her experiences at the orphanage, which included being beaten by teenage boys who Rosa armed with sticks and being tied to a fence in the hot sun until she suffered serious burns.
But not to be anything, but weren't most orphanages like this too at the same time? More orphanages sound like they were a bad place to be
they
until
were
like
awful.
2010. Yeah.
They were a bad. They were a bad place to be, but this one was particularly bad.
Yeah.
And it's not. They're not just going off of the word of one small child. Child gear. They went to the orphanage and
they went to the orphanage
and they found in the pit what is you know the cellar which became known as the pit. Mm-hmm. They found torture devices. It had been converted into a dungeon. Children were shackled to the walls and left to die.
Jesus,
what I'm talking
Christ.
About. I knew it was going to be a pedophile ring.
It's not
it
a
wasn't
pedophile.
Pedophile.
Ring.
No, she just
they were
left
sexually abused.
Probably. You just added that.
I'm sure that they were.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the boys that she sent to beat all the other children, they were
yeah,
between
sure, they
14
were...
and 19. Of course,
oh,
they
yeah.
were doing some
yeah, they were
weird
pecking
shit.
And a touching.
This is, yeah, this sounds like a terrible place. Very haunted. And this is the place that many
so what did they do with it?
Well,
so is it well, still, like, standing there?
I mean, yeah. Well, one paranormal investigator. Actually, yes, it is. They shut it down for years. It opened up, opened back up in the 1950s as a museum. People
okay.
are allowed to go down there. In fact, one paranormal investigator who explored the cellar where the children were tortured, she wrote... I crawled in the pit and saw what else? Nothing. I had my EVP recorder along with me.
See, this is
which
more
stands,
modern.
Yeah, I think
which
she
stands for electronic voice phenomena.
She sounds like a man, too, kind of.
We left and went back to the hotel to review the evidence.
Hence
that
woman.
Delta Burke? Was she the...
I had two EVPs. The one is my dad talking about going into the pit, and you hear a female's voice saying, get back. Get back now. And another one where my dad and I are in the pit and asked if anyone was in there, and a child's voice replies, yes.
Now get out of here. I'm coming
in. Child's voice replied, somebody burned the Tostinos.
Oh, that's terrible. I don't even know how you burn a Tostino.
Torture devices down there.
That is modern day kid torture, burning their Tostino, which is difficult to do.
People say they smell sulfur down there. Mm-hmm. Others come out with bites and scratch marks on them.
Hell yeah. Ooh, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's also apparently a small black dog that roams the grounds. People say, oh, look at the dog. And then they notice that the dog's feet don't touch the ground.
Wow.
Upstairs, outside of the pit, people report seeing a Confederate soldier who's bleeding from the neck and chest.
He's going, hey, how you doing? How you doing, ladies? Hey.
I don't know why
hey,
no one will like
what's
up?
Hey, cigarette
out
of
it. I got a bit of a neck wound, but if you look past that, to the
ooh,
fact that I'm a
yeah,
ghost.
I want to take it out. I want to take it to movies. Yeah. See, buddy. Hey.
There's also another Confederate soldier that can see be seen walking up the stairs holding a black satchel.
Okay.
Which is odd.
Yeah.
And after they...
the look on your face. Like, yeah. That is odd.
That is, yeah, the satchel yeah. there. Yeah.
Black Satchel's great band name.
Black it Satchel.
Is.
Oh,
it
yeah,
is, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. So they after they reopened it in the 50s, it's a morbid place.
I bet.
Because sure. they actually have recreations.
I feel like if they had done it like fun, if they had redone it in a fun way with like a ball haunted, pit and shit, yeah. it'd be like, that would be really disgusting.
Really weird.
Yeah.
So they show
that would be pretty incredible.
I love it. I'm saying yeah. I love it, but I'm yeah. just saying it's probably better they do it in morbid than just being like, and then the Hamburglar comes. Like, hey, there's a statue of the Hamburglar down there. Just
I think
like,
that would rile
he's
up
pacifying the children.
It could rile up some ghosts though, especially if it's the kid, the child ghost. If kids are over there having a great time, full of joy, that would really anger these kids who were tortured and murdered.
A whole basement of kids who never even got to have a hamburger, probably.
Yeah,
that's a shame to me. That's the ultimate torture.
It wasn't invented yet.
When was the hamburger invented?
Sometime later.
Sometime later, yeah. When the clown made it. Ronald McDonald.
In fact, what they have down there is they have a wax dummy named Johnny shackled to the wall.
Aw, Johnny's That's doing great. Fine.
Yeah.
In fact, Hollywood Square regular Charlie Weaver narrates the story of Johnny's punishment.
And you ask,
who is Charlie Weaver?
Yeah.
And how was he on Hollywood Square?
He was obviously a regular.
He was a regular.
Yeah, he's huge.
So let's hear a little bit of Charlie Weaver.
Yeah.
Charlie, you didn't go for the block with Marty in the middle. Okay, let's see what happens.
She went for the bubble instead of the block.
Ooh, Charlie, telling bone-chilling stories from the South since 1974.
This is fired. A vice admiral or a rear admiral?
Well, that depends on who drinks the most.
Oh, hello.
Charlie Weaver.
Brings a little levity.
Mom.
That's yeah. why he's a regular.
That is the oldest, ugliest man. He looks yeah. like...
Now imagine him narrating the story of a little boy being chained to the wall and tortured to death.
Little Johnny and his head, his little bubbles and his baubles played with, and he had his toes as smishing, he smashed, and he had his fingers all cribbity crumpled.
It doesn't seem like that strange of a situation for him. He seems like he has kids tied up in his basement.
Oh, yeah. No, he's seen it 1,000 times. He wrote Definitely. The book on doing bad things to yes. a child, and the book was called... Doing Bad Things to a Child by Charlie Chuckmeister Weaver.
Weaver. The weave. I make the guys and the boys call me the big weave. Yeah.
Then there was the Hare Tavern, which was also a Confederate hospital. People hear sounds of sawing and men begging for mercy. Mm. Soldiers wandering the grounds, bleeding from every fucking orifice that you can think of.
It just sounds like everyone's just got to get the fuck out of Virginia.
Yeah.
Get out of there.
Yeah.
Virginia's littered with ghosts.
Were there any major medical advancements made throughout this time, or were they just like, we have so many people, just saw it off?
They learned what not to do.
Yeah,
that's
it. Like, oh, you know what we gotta do? We gotta wash this shit. You know what I mean?
You can't just pretend like it's washed.
No, we gotta wash it. Yeah. You know when sometimes we just shouldn't let them just die. You know,
don't
we should try to do something for them. You know.
Then there's the Daniel Lady Farm. That's where they took guys who suffer from artillery wounds, chest wounds, and lost limbs. They were brought to the farm to just suffer for the final moments of their lives.
Awesome.
And that has one of the biggest hauntings, because you have the ghost of both General Isaac Ewell and a corps of 10,000 soldiers.
Jesus.
And it's said to still haunt the ground.
And he's still directing them.
Still directing them.
That's a great afterlife. If you're a general and you die with 1,000 of your soldiers and you get to be a general for all eternity.
Boss forever? Yeah,
great.
That would be amazing.
Ewell. General Ewell.
So let's bring all of this thing together in one of the 1800s greatest spiritualists, the man who was behind the plan, Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, love old spindly Lincoln.
Yeah.
Oh, not so gay, secret gay Lincoln.
Nothing gay about him. Just dressed real well and had concern for his fellow man.
I mean, he never slept with his wife.
No,
that's fine. You know, he had many close male compatriots.
Many yes. close male friends.
But he's just a good old-fashioned funny guy. You saw Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's right.
He's nobody straighter than Daniel Day-Lewis.
He's an actor from Hollywood. Of course. Him and Mr. Weaver, the two straightest guys around.
Yeah, never sucked in a little boy's nuts.
No.
Well, that's for a different episode.
So what I didn't know about Lincoln is while during his presidency, he used to have mediums come to the White House all the time. And
well, this
he's
was actually, this was mediumship at its like height.
It really was.
You know,
was.
It's like there was like, well, we had the Fox sisters. There was a bunch of people who did this, like all throughout. There were celebrities channeling ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, the Fox sisters were great. Check them out. We did an episode on the Fox sisters.
One of our earliest episodes were about them.
Look them up. They're
big knuckles.
Yeah. Full of lies they were.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
And so here's another interesting thing about Lincoln is that he had a dream a week before his death, predicting it, essentially. Just this prophetic dream. And in fact, Henry, I'd like you to read the journal entry.
This is very interesting, and I wonder if a week from now, if Henry will be standing over a boiling pot of sausages with a little red sauce, much as you dreamed last night.
I would be really happy, because then I'd have all the jam sausages in there.
All right.
All right, so it starts with about 10 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 days ago.
Well, it was a bit of a high pitch.
Very late. I soon began to dream. There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. And I heard subdued sobs as if a number of people were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. There the silence was broken by the same pitiful sobbing, but the mourners were invisible. I went from room to room. No living person was in sight, but the same mournful sounds met me as I passed alone. I was puzzled and laughed. It's the sound I made.
Okay, it's okay.
Determined to find the cause of a state of things so mysterious and shocking, I kept on until I arrived at the East Room. Before me was a catafalque, on which rested a corpse wrapped in funeral vestments. Around it were stationed soldiers who were acting as guards, and there was a throng of people, some gazing mournfully upon the corpse whose face was covered, others weeping pitifully. "Who is the dead in the White House?" I demanded one of the soldiers. "The president," was his answer. "He was killed by an assassin."
Wait, what?
An assassin.
An assassin, okay.
Then came a loud burst of grief from the crowd, it sounded like which awoke me from my dream. I slept no more that night, and though it was only a dream, I have been strangely annoyed by it ever since. But I just went ahead and sucked my assistant's penis and I felt better.
I get the feeling he was wearing a corset while he was writing that. I think Douglas might have won the debate if Lincoln would have used his inside voice outside. Yeah, do you think that...
His shoes are so tight. I am president of America.
Daniel Day-Lewis did it wrong. You nailed it, Henry. That's what Lincoln actually sounded like. No doubt about it.
Just like an old biddy.
Yeah, old biddy Lincoln. That's what they called him inside the old White House there. That's why he loved the theater so much.
Oh, and of course, as we all know, you know, Abraham Lincoln haunts the White House.
Lincoln bedroom. People say they've seen him countless times.
Yeah.
Presidents have been haunted by him. Richard Nixon was specifically haunted by Lincoln.
Harry S. Truman was specifically haunted by him.
Yeah, they saw him all the time. And
I would love to
around.
See Richard Nixon be haunted. He would be great.
I feel like no matter what was I think he could be just as sad and upset by being haunted by ghosts. He was like at the beach where he was just like at the beach, like, goddamn sand in my toupee.
Yeah.
There's sand in my arts and my lemonade. Oh,
there's a great Netflix documentary on Nixon, and they play a lot of his tapes. That's exactly what he sounded like. That's pretty much all he did. He just bitched about everything.
Yeah.
Very unhappy fella.
Yeah.
Very unhappy indeed. And of course, Ford's Theater is also haunted. People report hearing John Wilkes Booth running up and
farting
down
the dressing room.
Yeah.
Farted up. Thoughts of John Wilkes Booth.
It's insane that John Wilkes Booth was such a famous actor at the time. But
he was a big time actor. He was a regular Mel Gibson over there.
He was.
Yeah.
And actors to this day report icy sensations at center stage, strange noises, weeping and laughter, lights turning on and off, and a tendency to forget their lines.
But sadly, it's just them failing.
Yeah, it's just them not doing a good job on stage, or really killing it, or just not understanding what a sound technician does or what a lighting technician does. Where are all these lights coming from?
I'm up here doing my soliloquies, and these people are laughing and weeping. How dare there be a whole room of people to watch me? I prefer to act by myself.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
That's you 10 years from now. Yeah, it's going to be great.
So we have this...
I can't believe how much research you did that we didn't even touch.
No,
yeah,
I mean,
literally like touched like three things.
We didn't go through the Alamo, the battle in Scotland in 1632.
What was that battle of Scotland called, like Nimegekeke?
Yeah, Nimegekeke.
Something like that.
We didn't go through the Battle of Edgehill during the English Civil War. We didn't go through the Angel of World War One.
We'll do episodes like that. We'll pick this up and do more historical context. Absolutely.
Like the next one, we can almost devote completely just to Europe.
Yeah.
But although I would like to, you know, cover the Alamo at some point.
Of course you would. That will be your pièce de résistance.
All right, everybody. Marcus, put those pictures up on the last podcast page if you could.
Yeah, we'll see
the pictures. I want to see them.
Yeah.
Come and check out Murder Fist at the Chicago Sketch Comedy Festival this Friday and Saturday, 11 p.m. at Stage 773.
Mm-hmm.
We have a show January 27th.
I believe so.
January 27th, and this is the last show before Henry goes to leaves town
for a month to go to
Los Angeles. So come on down.
So I'll be phoning in from Los Angeles again, like I did last year, and it'll be fun. We'll have fun
on Skype. You'll be here for January 27th.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So, hell yeah.
Twitter at Ben Kissel and Marcus Parks and at Henry Loves You.
Yeah.
This is what I've been told to do.
We're doing
great. We're doing
good.
We're doing it.
Yes.
This is it.
Join the Facebook page and, you know, share your boobies to everybody.
Yeah.
Show your boobies to everybody as well. Yes, of course. Well, hail Satan, everybody.
Hail fucking Satan.
And, hail Gein.
I hope that statue goes up in Oklahoma. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, statue absolutely. Looks awesome. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a lawyer buddy of mine who works for the ACLU, and we might have
him
on.
They can't block it.
Other than this show or Top Hat.
They can't block it.
No, they can't. No.
It's a wonderful thing.
We'll talk about that on another podcast.
Magustalations.
Magustalations. Hail yourselves. And thank you guys so much for listening and making this another show.
We love you very, very deeply.
Yeah. Don't do that. We just lost. And now we're the number 5th show.